The journey of caring for a loved one who is living with dementia can be quite challenging. The aim of this podcast is to make caregiving less daunting and more fulfilling. On this platform, we share knowledge, understanding, and experiences. We enlighten, give hope, and encourage, and in the process, create positive awareness about different aspects of dementia. Welcome to my podcast, Dementia Caregivers Corner. My name is Julia Ratladi. Dementia Care, how deep is your love?
In today's special episode, we are honored to welcome back a remarkable guest, Miss Danielle Mueller. Danielle is not only the founder of Spark Financials, a leading life and financial planning firm specializing in supporting family caregivers, but she's also a certified financial planner professional with a passion for comprehensive financial development, education, and tax law research. Many of you may remember Danielle from her previous visit to our podcast, where she graciously shared with us on how to prepare ourselves to become full-time caregivers. Today, Danielle returns to offer invaluable insights into the life after the loss of her beloved family member. Danielle, our heart goes out to you. We are sorry about your family member. May her soul rest in peace. So beyond her professional accomplishments, Danielle is a dedicated mom, a loving wife, and a passionate educator. She is a personal finance enthusiast on a mission to spread awareness and make this world a better place for caregivers and their families. Welcome to Dementia Caregivers Corner once more, Danielle.
Thank you so much for having me. I had so much fun the last time we did the podcast. So I'm guessing this will be just as fun. So
yes, I believe so too. Yeah, let's get into it then. In our previous chat, Danielle, you mentioned that you, at one point, you had to caution your loved one to put their affairs in order because you didn't want a situation whereby if anything happened to them, like if they pass on, everything's going to be on your shoulders, especially as an only child. Did you think, did it work well for you, looking at the passing of one, your loved one?
Unfortunately not. That's why I'm laughing. And it's funny because we were talking about like being an only child, but my grandmother had three children, but only one person was predominantly handling the finances. And so it felt like, in a way, an only child situation because one person was predominantly taking care of the finances. So I wish things were all in order. It's not like I didn't like tell my grandmother, like, get all your paperwork in order, like read your trust. And she just would tell me like, nah, like I'll do what it like do it when I want to do it. Or she would tell me like, who cares? Like, I'll be dead then. You guys can take care of it. It definitely wasn't, I tried to like poke the bear, like I tried leading the horse to water, but
yes,
it didn't get as far as I wanted it to go. And so things are definitely very misorganized and chaotic now that we're trying to settle the estate. It's been 5 months now and the estate is not closed, which is hard because you're grieving and then you're dealing with all this paperwork. And then you're wondering, you know, you're thinking as if you're the person, like, where would you keep all this paperwork? Where would you keep, you know, the dress they wanted to wear for their funeral? Like, you're just scavenging, trying to find everything. And it's so difficult while you're grieving.
Yes. So what can you say to other caregivers out there?
You could only control so much. And you can try to lead the horse to water, but at the end of the day, it's very likely you're going to be scavenging just like I did, because there's going to be a lot of paperwork that you're going to be missing, or you're not going to know how to do everything. That's the sad part, is that I'm a financial professional, but I still had trouble. My grandmother had some very complex assets. And so it was collectively working with the attorneys, collectively working with accountants to really get on the same page as far as how we want to handle the estate.
When you started, you talked about that, yes, your grandma had three children and there was one person who was predominantly doing the work. Would you advise people to do that, like to choose one member of the family to take care of the affairs, or everyone has to come through to do their part? And what would be the advantages or disadvantages of that?
It depends. Every family is a little bit different. For example, you might have one child that is very lackadaisical and that you wouldn't want to trust with your finances. You may have another child who's very smart, but also very controlling and not letting you make a lot of the decisions on your estate. So everyone's a little bit different in how, you know, they view their children and how they trust them to manage their estate. And neither of the three, you know, kids may be an acceptable person to be, you know, handling the finances. That's all based on perception.
So when you look back, what are some of the things that you wished they would have done? Like the important ones that they would have taken care of before their passing?
I would at least do simple things. Read your trust. Make sure exactly what you want. Just because you have an attorney listen to what you want doesn't mean that it's written that way. So have your attorney review it with you. Read it over so you understand. Better communication. There was a lot of miscommunication. My grandmother really wanted to make everybody happy, and in the end, she made everybody miserable. That wasn't her intention, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And miserable meaning like it just got too chaotic. There was just a lot of emotions tied into her estate. So communicating with everybody, even if that means, I'm sorry, it's not going to be completely equal, but this is what my estate's going to be. Deal with it. Like, I know some people that have said, like, this is what it's going to be. If you have any complaints, then I'm taking you out of the will. And okay. If that's the route you want to go, that's up to you. But making sure you're communicating about your wishes is really important. If something's important to you, like wearing a dress to your funeral, make sure it's visible. Make sure everybody knows. Don't wait until 3 days before you pass away to show everybody where it's located. Like if something's really important to you, something that you really want to die in or something regarding your estate wishes, make sure people know where those things are so they're not clueless.
Okay. You know, in the class that I'm in, the MSc Dementia class that I'm doing, we're talking about end of life and death cafes. And we coming from Africa, because to us, it's more like it's a different kind of affairs where apparently the people here can say which ones is coming to my funeral. And is it the same that side? Because where I'm coming from, everyone is welcome to the funeral, no matter what. So if that
people may not think to do those specific details, but if that's really what you want, you may need to get so detail oriented as I don't want to invite Uncle Harry or, you know, whoever it is to the funeral.
Yes. The point is communication.
Okay. Yeah. Communication would have made a lot of things easier.
It encompasses everything, really. Yes. Any other thing that they should have taken care of, really, that is now bothering the family?
The estate is the major one, hence why the estate hasn't been closed yet. But if I'm thinking of it from a caregiving perspective of, there was just a lot of things that were left over. And as someone who took care of a lot of caregiving needs, it's really important that you're putting yourself as a priority during that time. Because as a grieving individual, you have identity reconstruction and you're grieving at the same time. You're thinking of yourself as a primary caregiver of someone or a wife or a spouse. Mm-hmm. And then you're transforming into now I'm a widow. Now I'm a former caregiver. And that's really difficult. And so the first thing I did was I bought all the care products for my grandmother. So okay. I was just like, I don't want to see these anymore. Like I had a half of a garage full of walkers, wheelchairs, anything you can think of we had. And I was like, I can't see this anymore. Find the fastest way to donate it. Like, I want it to be a good use, but I just can't see it anymore. And that was the first step that I took to make sure that my well-being was okay, because I was thinking of all the things I bought for her. Like, I bought her food like a week before she passed away. And so all the food was still in the refrigerator. So I just like donated that because I just couldn't see it anymore. It triggered me so much.
Yeah. Because I was talking to one lady from the United States, where you are. And I was asking her how she prepared herself to live life after, because the husband died of Alzheimer's. And she said she has long prepared for it because she knew that it's coming. But it was still difficult, even after the death, to integrate into the so-called normal life. I know that you are a professional, but how your work and grieving at the same time, how do you bring them together?
I couldn't. I took 3 weeks, not 3 weeks, 3 months off of work. Like, I was just facilitating my current clients. I wasn't taking on any new clients during that time. With everything that was going on, I couldn't do both at the same time. I couldn't be a professional and grieve and deal with the estate all at the same time. It was just way too much. And unfortunately, that was what I had to do in order to process my grief, in order to get myself back on track. I'm really glad that I did. This is why, like, having grieving processes within an employer is really important, and being able to take that time off to really grieve is important. But many people are not able to do that, mostly because it's a financial perspective, not able to. Like, I was reading a recent study, and it was saying that 75% of women cannot take more than 5 weeks off of work.
Yes, I think this lady that I was talking about, she was able to because the husband had already had money, and money was not an issue for them. So she was able to grieve her husband peacefully, which is a luxury to other people, as you said.
Yeah. It makes me sad because it, like, I had flexibility within caregiving to be that predominant caregiver. And I had the flexibility to grieve and process for about as much as I could. It's not like that time was all grieving, but many people don't get that opportunity.
What should they do, Danielle?
If their employer is not willing to work with them, to be flexible with them, they may not have a choice. But really sitting down with their employer and saying, you know, this is what happened. My spouse died. You know, my parent died. I need some time to process this and see if they're willing to be flexible, like either have you remote or part-time, so at least you're still getting an income. But it may just be that you have to, you know, go along the ride and just do your best at work, and just so you can get a paycheck so you could live. And that's what a lot of caregivers do as well, is we do what we can to live and survive. And if that means taking on a job that we're not fully there for because we can't think straight, because we've been caregiving all night, or, you know, in the hospital all night, or, you know, just caregiving is so overwhelming that we're burnt out, we do whatever we can to survive.
And again, because you are attached to that person, that's what you have been doing. That's what you know. You know, it's hard now to get out and say, I'm going to look for something different, if you have been doing it for some time.
Yeah, like calling my grandmother every morning, like, was impossible. You know what I mean? Like, asking her advice when my daughter had trouble in school, I couldn't do that. We did pour a lot into each other's cups. And so when that cup was missing, it's difficult. It's not like caregiving is just one way where we just give to our loved ones and that's it. They also give love and joy back to us. And so when my cup is not being able to be filled by her, like, that's tough.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because that was the next question. Like, how those experiences that you miss with your grandma, what are those that maybe you took for granted? You know, but now you can feel that I really miss those moments that we have. You can share some of those moments.
Yeah, there was a lot of really great moments, like cooking with her, calling her on the phone. Her mannerisms were really funny a lot of the time. We had, you know, I'm not saying that everything was peaches and cream, but we had a lot of really cherished moments that I'll definitely remember for a very long time. And I think my daughter, even though she's so young, will probably remember as well.
Oh, that's so beautiful. May her soul continue to rest in peace. So when we come to the moments, the experiences that we have with our loved ones, what can you say to the caregivers? How should they spend that, knowing that they might not be there anymore, you know?
I think it goes back to the conversation we had last time about, you know, caregiving will eventually end. So we have to figure out what we're going to do when it ends. And for me, I knew I was going to continue to work and be a financial planner. But those first couple weeks after my grandmother passed, I was like, I don't want to do anything. Like, I would just be okay, which is like sitting on a couch, like eating potato chips, like just being lazy for the rest of my life, because I didn't really want to do anything. Like, I just didn't have any interest in doing anything. I was questioning like my life, like what I wanted to do in the future. Just because I had plans to continue my business doesn't mean that I, at that moment of grieving, that I wanted to turn back, that I wanted to go back to the same life as before. I'm grateful that the 3 months that I was off really got me to really think about what my next steps were and how do I move forward, and that fire has been lit again. But it's really hard when you're so burnt out to then think to myself, what is my next step?
Yes. You see, you've already felt that how tough it was, even though you are a professional, you run a company. What about those who were just so early on caregiving, how tough that might be for them? Because there was nothing that they were doing apart from caregiving.
Yeah. Then it's like, what is your next purpose? What is meaningful? How do you relate to that death? Do you think of it as a blessing? Do you think of it as maybe a burden because, you know, you still are not able to continue to fill the duties of caregiving anymore? You're having a really life stage transition.
Let us come to your farm. Tell me, Danielle, what are the challenges that most of the people who use your services, what do they come with? What challenges them the most that they say, I want to go and see Danielle?
It's definitely a mixture. It's interesting how like learning about caregiving can kind of transition everywhere. It's like, as I tell others, like you may be caregiving now and that's what you're doing full time, caring for a loved one. But those skills can be transferred to a lot of different places that you're probably not realizing. So predominantly the clients that I work with is, as I said, family caregivers, women in transition. Transition meaning that they recently got out of divorce, they recently had a health issue, some type of transition in their life, they moved to a different city. Helping and empowering women is really important to me. I'm not saying that male caregivers don't exist. I just want to make sure that women feel empowered to make financial decisions for themselves, because usually they're not the ones in power to make those decisions.
Okay. Do you have like success stories that you'd like to share with us? Like somebody who was clueless, not knowing the direction, not knowing the way, and they came to see you and voila. Something positive came out of it?
As we say in our caregiving journey, I think it's the financial journey as well. I wish I could just magically change some numbers and voila, you wake up in the next morning and magically yes. Everything falls into place. I was working with one client. I'm still currently working with her. She got out of a really nasty divorce and she was pretty much starting from scratch, starting over. And we've been working with each other for the last year. And the words that came out of her mouth last week was, I'm ready to die. And most people would say like, oh, you're ready to die, as in like, that's like really bad. Like that's like depressing. But for this woman, it was like, I feel comfortable in myself. I feel comfortable in what we've done together. And that if something were to happen to me, like I would be safe for my children. I would be able to be secure in a place that they would have everything put together for them, that they wouldn't have to worry.
Yes. Because when you mentioned it too, I was like, oh, ready to die. Thank God you explained it.
Yeah.
It's one of the success stories. The success stories. And I think I saw something that you posted on LinkedIn concerning what we have to think about, what we should be concerned about. Because, I mean, everyone is going to get old. It's inevitable, right? So, like, what should we be looking for and how to tackle that? You shared something on LinkedIn, I think. Can we talk about those questions?
Yeah, that's dense. Yes. Maybe we should do the next podcast about that, but I'll try to trim it short. As we go through our caregiving journey, we go through different stages. I started with the expectation that I'll be a caregiver, but I didn't know when. Mm-hmm. So planning for each stage is really important. The first one as an expecting caregiver is making sure you're in a self-care routine. Make sure that you know yourself and the proper places to get self-care. For me, that was seeing a therapist weekly. That was going on walks. That was making myself a cup of tea in the morning. Do what makes you feel good, because that's what's going to ultimately get you through the caregiving journey. It's not us talking on a podcast that's going to get you through. It's the steps you take to make yourself well.
Yes.
And then gradually, as you go through the stages, you're thinking to yourself, eventually, my loved one's going to die. And what does that transition look like? But as we're moving through the stages, we're also thinking, what happens if something happens to us? Like if I pass away before my loved one, just because, you know, I'm in my 20s, there is a slight chance that I may die before my loved one. So what am I doing to prepare myself for that to happen? Do I have my documents in place? You are the model for your loved one. What it looks like. Do I have my long-term care plan in place? What does that look like? We want and expect that out of our loved ones. Then why aren't we doing it for ourselves? Why aren't we the model? Why aren't we, we're making sure they get their medications every day. We're nagging them. Why didn't you take your medications? That's what we would say. Like, why didn't you go to the doctor when, you know, you said you were going to? Or sometimes as caregivers, we don't mean to nag, but sometimes we do. And like, are we doing it ourselves? Like, I failed to go for my annual doctor's appointments. So it wasn't until 6 months before caregiving ended that I actually started going to annual doctor's appointments. Like, how can we expect that out of our loved ones if we're not doing it ourselves?
You know, there was a study or research that I read on that said there are some support services for caregivers, but most of them do not use the support services that are being offered to them or for them. I'm wondering why. Do you have an idea why some caregivers, family caregivers, yet there are some support services that are there for them, they don't access those or they do not go there?
From my perspective, I don't know it like a perfect answer for you, but I would say from my experience, sometimes we're so go, go, go. We're so infatuated with caregiving that we don't often think about ourselves. We're just thinking about them. Mm-hmm. And like, I didn't really start looking at support services until I would say 2 years into caregiving. And that's when it really started getting really tough, where I just was like, what am I getting myself into? And I hope people don't just start using those services when things get really tough. You know, we hope that they use those support services when things are not bad so they can prepare for when times get tough, so they can hear other people and their experiences. I think it's also a mixture of, it's not when you're burned out, it's not easy to find resources. Mm-hmm. Like I can Google caregiving and I got a list of nonprofits in the United States that are available. Where do I start? Who do I call? It's a lot. Like, where do you start? And so I think that's the fault of also nonprofits are, you reaching the people who you really want to reach?
Yes.
Are you able to really gravitate towards those people? Because those people are trying to look. They're just not maybe able to get a hold of you.
The one that you said that maybe you're just consumed with caregiving and you don't see anything else apart from caregiving. Yes, I wasn't looking at it like that, you know, and it's true. All right. What is it that people, when they want to use your firm, how are they going to benefit from using your firm?
So the primarily reason why people come to me for services is one, so they don't have to do it themselves. I really am supportive in my clients' needs and making sure that they don't have to worry about anything else but caregiving, because that's what's really important to them and making sure they're taking care of themselves. So my job is to make sure that their finances are taken care of and creating an action plan so this is as simple as possible so they feel secure about moving forward.
That's good, then. I don't know whether you have any other thing that maybe you want to talk about from your side that you think will benefit our listeners.
Yeah, I'll just say to whoever is in after caregiving stage or feels that after caregiving is coming soon, that it's really tough. And it wasn't easy for me as a financial advisor dealing with all this. And I don't expect it to be easy for you. And I hope that you find someone who can support you, who can be there for you, because that's what you're going to need. You're going to need someone who can really be on your side and empower you and be there to not solve all your problems, but just to listen. And since I've gone through it myself, I have a very, very like empathetic vision, and I really deeply understand how difficult it is. Your story may be totally different from mine, but finding someone who can listen to you, that can support you, like I had, is a pretty much the only way I got through it. I felt like that person who was like the like I was like nagging people, like I was like, please, like, can I talk to you? Like, I felt like a burden to other people because I needed help. And I think that's what we get wrong. If someone really cares about you and someone really wants you to be well, then they'll stay there for you. They'll be there to support you. Don't feel like if someone's like, if you say, I want to talk to you at X and X time. Are you available this time? If they're saying yes, that's your open door, like to receive support, to receive help. Don't take that back and say, like at the end of the call, like maybe I was a burden to them because I expressed, you know, how I was grieving. Or don't sit back and say, like maybe I shouldn't have asked for help. You are viable. Yeah, you are viable of that support. You are honorable and respectable, and it is totally okay to seek help because that's what you need.
Thank you. No, you summed it up. Thank you very much for that. Oh, Danielle, this topic is just a heavy topic. It's just an emotional a topic because you and I know what people go through. And for me, why I wanted again to talk with you today is because I know you are in the industry and you are a professional as well, and you offer such services to support caregivers. That's why I really wanted to get it from you. So when people now see that even yourself, who is a professional, who it was a caregiver, you struggled with this. So what more of them who are not even in the field? Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, and I didn't say everything like perfectly eloquently, but maybe that shows how painful it is to talk about this topic and how hard it is because like it's people think like grief is just like it goes away really quickly. It's like, okay, 3 months are over, like you don't grieve anymore. But it's 5 months and it's still difficult. So
I cannot thank you enough. Just thank you that you're going through this and you had time to talk with us again. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Danielle.
Dementia Care, how deep is your love?